like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. Before to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 20. 2016, like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort.
Hey everybody, good morning and welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Coming to you every week right here from Atlanta Business Radio X. If you never checked out the studios at Atlanta Business Radio X, you ought to come down here. They're fantastic. If you ever thought about being on a show or hosting a show, it's a great place to be. We interview on the Shrimp Tank every week the brightest and best business owners in the state of Georgia about the do's and don'ts of starting, growing, and creating a successful business. The Shrimp Tank, what we also do from time to time, we've got some more exciting news to talk about today, is we bring on young kids, the future entrepreneurs of tomorrow, to present us with some live pitches of their business. This is almost like the Shark Tank, except we don't fund them. We like to talk to them about the business so they can create a successful business plan. We always put them in front of our panel of bright business owners, and we see whether or not your business will swim or will it will sink in the tank. As every week, I'm your co-host, Ted Jenkins, sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks. Chris, what's up here on a Thursday at lunchtime with our Shrimp Tank crew?
Ted, Thursday at lunchtime, this is the first time we've been talking about it. We've been teasing it, but this is the first time that it is official. It is public. The vote went our way yesterday, and we are now the only entrepreneurship degree. You can go to Kennesaw State now and get a Bachelor's of Business Administration in entrepreneurship.
So that is pretty super exciting news. We've been talking about this for how long? Probably a year. In the motion. Now, what tipped it here to get the vote to happen? Was it just
I'm getting just phenomenal feedback. I was actually surprised at all the feedback that we got about how encouraging and how positive everything was received. So, there's a lot of movement in entrepreneurship, and the fact this kind of makes us the catalyst for leading entrepreneurship in the Southeast.
So we've got a great guest that's going to be coming on today, John Boykin of Business Golf International. But I'm curious in here if you could share with the people, because a lot of people that are listening that may be thinking about their children or where to send them, because Kennesaw State is exploding like crazy. The university is growing. But what does it mean for their kid to get a degree in entrepreneurship? What does that exactly mean?
Yeah, well, and we're more focused on having them experience entrepreneurship than us teaching entrepreneurship. So, you know, it's not Scantron bubbles and memorize the information that we regurgitate to you. You know, in the age of Google, these students can access information at their fingertips. So we're more focused on transformation as opposed to we are information, and really getting these students to think, act, and behave with an entrepreneurial mindset. So whether or not they start their own venture, or you got one of my entrepreneurial students working for you,
kids are superstar.
Yeah, absolutely. So those kinds of mindset and those kinds of kids, we are going to be the destination point for them.
Well, I think it's interesting because whether your child owns a business or they get into a corporation, the truth is after a while, your boss isn't going to teach you anything and you're going to have the one to figure your way out to navigate yourself to the corporation. Or you're going to end up starting your own business. It's going to happen one way or the other.
Yeah, and these millennials have to think of themselves as a brand, because they'll have depending on which research you look at, some say up to 14 jobs by the time they're 30. So this idea of sticking with one company, even for a year, if a millennial stays with you for a year, they think they've done you a favor. So these students have to think of themselves more like a brand and say, look, I am an entrepreneur regardless of who employs me, and I'm here to serve others, create value, and solve problems. And as long as I can do that, I can forge a good living.
Well, and I think that's how you will keep the millennials over time in your corporation. You have to show them that growth path, the opportunity to advance in their career. They actually want to be entrepreneurs in your organization. They don't want to be babysit. So
absolutely.
But
no,
you've got to be.
Autonomy is a big motivator for millennials.
You've got to be willing to give them constant feedback, though, no?
Yep. Oh, yeah. A little too constant sometimes. So they say that you should never, ever, the rule of thumb is no more than 7 days without a thank you. So we've kind of come full circle for the Great Depression, where you were supposed to leave. You didn't go home. Every day you were supposed to thank your boss for the privilege of having a job during the Great Depression. And you say, Mr. Wilson, thank you for letting me work here, to the reverse with the millennials, where we have to thank them every 7 days.
Well, I failed at that, so I better get that on my radar now. But I do want to ask you one more question before we get talking with John today about his business. And I think that what I see more and more every day, and it's not a millennial thing per se, but I seem to be seeing it more in business. How do you teach the kids at Kennesaw State about this idea of doing two very simple things? One, showing up on time. And two, just having a smile while you do your job. Because it seems to me that in some sense, no matter where you go to college, that there's so many people today that, you know, you make proposals, you ask them to do things, and one, they don't show up.
Yeah.
Or two, they've got some excuse later, like my dog ate my homework or family yeah. member got sick or something like that. But I feel this excuse making is getting larger and larger out there in America.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't really excuse your way to a better life, right? And so this idea of, okay, I'm entitled. One of our core values is to break entitlement, right? So if you feel like you're entitled to something, that doesn't correspond. That's a good employee mindset or not a good employee mindset, but that is representative more of like an employee mindset that versus an entrepreneurship mindset, which is the only way I get paid is if I provide value for somebody else first. So part of the providing value is not only showing up time, I'm going to be there 5 minutes beforehand and ready to go, you know, serving somebody. Hey, how else can I help in taking the initiative to serve others? Again, acting like the business owner, right? The business owner, if I own the building, I'm going to pick up the trash. Well, if I work in the building, I don't pick up the trash. But what if you did? How much more valuable would you be come race time?
Yeah, this is why, you know, for parents out there, and we're going to get to John Boykin, our guest here in just a second. You think about what's happening with your kids today at school. And they have, I'm amazed by it, that they have makeup for everything. You get a D on a test. Well, if you come for some extra makeup, then we'll change your grade to a B. And the fact is, when they get out in the real world, a D is a D. Actually, a D probably means they're going to be fired. And so there are no makeups at work. And I think that going through a program like Kennesaw yeah. State and it being experiential versus testing, you can pass tests all day long. But once you get out in the real world, it's about result.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You get to have A's and B's. And as I think if you said at one time, a lot of the C students end up being the boss of the A students.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah. The C students. Yeah. There's definitely no correlation between, academic scoring and successful entrepreneurship. It's usually the A students that tend to work for those C students sometimes when they become entrepreneurs.
Well, congratulations on that. Big announcement for Kennesaw State. Now the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. And Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of that. I mean, I'm really, really excited about what you've done there and excited to continue to talk about this in Atlanta because we know it's the small business owners of America who are going to make the future jobs. It's not going to be these large corporations that keep on cutting jobs. So our guest today is John Boykin. He's a friend of ours. He owns a company called Business Golf International. There's probably nobody I've ever met that knows more about dealing and running charitable golf tournaments than John Boykin. Maybe not more about golf, period, but definitely be about running golf tournaments. So we wanted to learn more today because there are many, many different types of businesses to get into. And some of you may love a sport. It may not be golf. It may be tennis. It may be something else. And saying to yourself, is there a business model around this that I can actually quit my job today and do this and create a business? So, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'd like to start by asking Chris a question, though.
Yeah, I like that.
Where he just talked about the C student often becoming the boss of the A student.
Right.
Does this dispel that old joke that my friends at Georgia Tech love to tell about what does a Georgia alum call a Georgia Tech alum? Boss?
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard that before.
I just want to make sure that there's a possibility yes. that dispels that because, yeah. See, I didn't go to college. I went to Georgia.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, we'd have to start getting candidates now and go down to Perimeter and all these other colleges, just pick them up, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and I would applaud what you're doing at Kennesaw. This is probably the second best decision the school's ever made. The first was asking my old friend Vince Dooley to come over and shepherd you into the football program.
Yes, absolutely.
So a couple of really good decisions that Kennesaw has made. I congratulate you on that because the opportunity to learn, I mean, my gosh, I'm in the position I'm in because – didn't take me long to figure out that the only boss I could work for was me.
Yeah.
And nobody was ever driven to do the things I wanted to do as much as I was. So that was the reason we have to, you know, to to inspire young people to get into business on their own. So congratulations.
Yeah, you know, thank you. You touched on the number one reason people become entrepreneurs, and survey after survey, it's to be your own boss. That's the number one reason, right? They say, look, I'm tired of working somewhere else. It's the number one reason people quit jobs. They don't quit jobs statistically, they quit bosses.
Yeah, I did it to avoid HR. But that was my reason. Yeah, those are just my no.
Yeah, yeah. And we did introduce that on a previous show, the term boss hole. So, boss hole, right? We tend to say, look, I'm not going to work for a boss hole anymore. I'm going to do my own thing. I want to be my own boss. So you touched on the number one reason that draws people into entrepreneurship.
So we know, John, that you are a professional golfer. You've traveled all over the world, probably played and seen and courted people over some of the best golf courses in the world. How did you decide to make the jump to start this business of Business Golf International?
Well, quite honestly, Ted, in the mid-80s, having been through the club pro world, and as I say, I got tired of making tee times, folding shirts, and giving golf lessons to old people. So I decided to start my own business. And in those days, in the early to mid-80s, I had enough of a reputation as a player and as a professional and a speaker and enough kind of buzz about me that I could go out and do corporate events, giving clinics and performing at tournaments and corporate events, corporate tournaments, charity tournaments, those kinds of things. And that led to the connection with certain brands and products that wanted us to help them work. And the one thing that I would say to Chris about in your curriculum that I think is a real key element to becoming an entrepreneur is recognizing when you need to change lanes.
Yeah.
I can tell you that over the years, Business Golf International has reinvented itself at least half a dozen times. And we do very different things today from what we did 5 years ago and then what we did the 5 years before that. You have to stay fresh. You have to stay relevant, you have to stay productive, and you've got to become great value to your clients, to the people that you work with, to the people that you meet. I have a couple of sayings that are kind of on a piece on my desk. My favorite one is, a sale takes place when the perceived value exceeds the price point.
That's right.
When somebody wants something from you that they believe is worth more than what you're charging them for it, you're in. And we've worked diligently to make sure that we provide to our clients, our partners, if you will, the people that we work with, and we think of it as partnerships, great value for what we do for them.
So you mentioned this idea, you touched on an interesting topic about this idea, and I guess the trendy term now in entrepreneurship is pivot, right? In the constant reinvention of ourselves and how we sort of brand ourselves, how do we communicate the value that we offer, how do we deliver the value that we offer? So is there any sort of thing that you've learned that allows you to know when to pivot? Like, how do you stay on top of things so that you know that, hey, we need to change and reinvent ourselves?
Well, I'd like to give you a really clever answer to that. But the hard answer is when it stops working, pivot.
Yeah.
When you stop growing your revenues, when you stop, just your incomes start to diminish. That just means there's less of a market for what you're talking about doing. I give you a great example. I had at one point an agent out of Boston, Massachusetts that was fabulous. He would book days, corporate days for me, and I was making a lot of money and didn't have to work very much. Well, when that dried up, and it literally did because corporations stopped spending money on golf, and this was long before the 2008 crash. This was long before that because it goes in waves, ups and downs. I all of a sudden had to say, okay, now how am I going to make some money at this? What am I going to do? And that's when we got more into products and services. And then we started creating programs. we started creating ways for people to use golf as a business tool. I mean, if you go and look at our website, that's basically what we're founded on. We show our corporate and charitable clients how to use golf as a business tool. Golf can be used like any other marketing, sales, communications, brandings tactic. It can be used just like advertising, whether it's print, radio, or television. It can be used just like any other entertainment aspect to bolster or build client relationships. We had to go into figuring out what are ways that our business bottom line could be productive, because that's what entrepreneurship is all about.
Right.
You make it, you spend it, you go make it again. You spend it, you go make it again. It's just that simple. There's no guarantees. There's no paycheck at the end of the month unless you go out and make that happen. And that's exciting.
Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here on Atlanta Business Radio X in Sandy Springs. We come to you every week from 11:30 to 12:30 live. Glad you're enjoying us during lunch. We've got our guest on today. John Boykin is the CEO of Business Golf International, a really interesting business model. You can always hear a replay of all of our podcasts on shrimptankpodcast.com. We've got over 40 or 50 interviews on there now with some of the brightest and best CEOs all across the state of Georgia. Sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. And John, you know, one of the things that I think would be interesting for entrepreneurs that are listening today is that if I start a business like this with a hobby I might love or something I was really good at, like tennis or golf, how do you figure out where to price yourself into this? Do you price out per project? Do you price out on an hourly basis? You know, because I'm assuming that, or do you sell products, or is it some combination of all of it?
It is a bit of a combination of all of it, but I think I know what you have to do to start with is you have to put a value on your time.
Right.
What is your credential? I mean, I'm very proud that I'm more than 40 years now a member of the PGA of America, which is different from the PGA Tour, just so we all know. The PGA Tour, think of it this way, those are the professional golfers, and the PGA of America, we're the golf professionals.
Right.
So we're the business
side. But some of those golf professionals play in the PGA Championship, right?
Well, that's because we, the PGA of America, we own that championship.
Is that right?
That's our major. Yes, we own that. And at one time, we had 40 club professionals play in it. And then quite honestly, you know, as the tournament grew in stature, we needed to provide more playing spots for the professional golfers, the tour players. And so now we have 20 spots in the tournament.
Wow.
And that's the 20 club professionals that finished the top 20 places in our national club pro championship.
Wow.
So that's how you get into the PGA championship.
See that, yes, Hanks? Learn something new every
we
day.
We own the PGA championship. We also own the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup belongs
really?
To the PGA of America. Yes, sir.
Where is that this year? It's local,
it's,
right?
It's in outside of Minneapolis.
Oh, so I thought, yeah.
If you hadn't asked me, I could have told you. But it's in September outside of Minneapolis at a fabulous golf course there.
Better to go there than in December.
Yes. Well, we don't play a lot of golf in Minnesota in December. but back to my earlier point about you have to put a value on your time. And I think that comes from what your credential is. And if you're going to start a business, you've got to figure, okay, this is what I'm worth on an hourly basis. So that's the fundamental basis for which you start your company as an entrepreneur, at least in the products and services category. So you've got an hourly rate, and at BGI, Business Golf International, we call it BGI, we have, you know, a basic hourly rate that we charge. We then take and we'll look at a project. We do events for large charities and corporations, and we know about how many hours it takes to create, develop, and execute that event. So we simply multiply the hourly rate times that. That's the fee that we charge. We have some situations where we have some clients that they pay us a commission based on the services that they provide that we sell on their behalf. We don't sell shirts and golf balls and those kind of things, but
right,
we sell certain programming. The Pebble Beach Company, Pebble Beach, California, they're one of our clients. So we work with getting people to go fulfill an item on their bucket list of going and playing at Pebble
sure.
Beach. So we do programs for them, and that's based on the amount that the client spends. I'd say it's kind of a commission arrangement, but that's what it is. So you've got to utilize a multiplicity of different ways to sell your services. But the first one is always have what your time is worth.
Yep. So how do you know when you're charging too much?
When people don't hire you.
So what percentage or like, so, but you could make the reverse argument, right? Are you getting too many clients? So what's the right closing ratio for you?
Well, for us, because we look at projects on a very big basis. We don't do a lot of small programs. Our closing rate's pretty good because we don't do a lot of cold calling. We're already pre-introduced to people. They know a little bit about who we are and what we do. So we have a pretty high closing rate. But we're a small company. We only have 4 people on staff. And so we know how much time we can allocate. We know how many clients we can have. We've been very fortunate to have some major clients. We did work for the American Cancer Society for nearly 6 years.
Yeah.
We helped them raise more than $40 million net dollars through golf events. We're very proud of that.
Hey, we're going to take a break from our sponsors. We'll be right back with John Boykin, who's the CEO of Business Golf International. You're listening to The Shrimp Tank on Atlanta Business Radio X. When we come back, we're going to find out, is it a good idea to wear the same clothes as John Daly on the golf course?
Would you like to have live radio at your next trade show or conference? Well, now you can with Business Radio X and Radio in My Booth, engaging a target audience on location. To learn more about having live radio at your next trade show, conference, or expo, go to radioinmybooth.com. That's radioinmybooth.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Shrimp Tank. Thanks for joining us live here every Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30 at Atlanta Business Radio X. As I said, if you did not catch the initial part of the broadcast with John Boykin, CEO of Business Golf International, you can always hear a replay at shrimptankpodcast.com. Every week, I'm joined with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of the Shore Center of Entrepreneurship. Exciting news today that they announced about officially becoming the first university or college in the state of Georgia to actually have a degree in entrepreneurship. All others will probably try to follow.
We'll get those follow-ons.
It's one of those things say, yeah, I'm going to pick up the back of my foot and just like look at it, because you could try to follow us, but by then we'll be two steps ahead.
Yes. We won't be the only anymore, but we'll always be the best.
Yep. Someone's got to be the pioneer, right?
That's right.
Well, we like to do in our second segment today with all of our business owners, and we're here with John Boykin, what we call to be hot or not. So we're going to ask John a series of questions and see what he thinks about it. I'm pretty sure that John will be able to answer. He always has a good answer about this. So I sort of teased you before the break and I talked about this, but I noticed myself, and you know, I'm sort of one of those quasi golfers. I'll be lucky if I shoot 100 when I go out, but I prefer to play in charity tournaments. You have less damage when that happens, but they have all these new clothes today and it's crazy. You got Ricky Fowler has his line and John Daly has his line. And so is it a good idea? Is it hot or not to spend a lot of money on golf clothes to look good, even if your game, you know, kind of sucks?
Well, as they used to say, it's better to look good than to feel good. So, yes, I would say yes. I mean, not so much to spend a lot of money, because you don't have to. Every industry, every sport, every business goes through its cycles. There's nothing new. It's just cycles repeat. And I can tell you the stuff that John Daly wears today. Loudmouth is the name of the product brand.
Is that the name of his brand? Loudmouth?
Loudmouth.
It's some ugly looking clothes. I have to say. Well, they're not good looking.
I can tell you, I can show you photographs of stuff that I wore in the 70s that looks almost exactly like a lot of paisleys, this, that, and the other. But let's talk about this from a business standpoint. John Daly, when he was approached by the two owners of Loudmouth to wear their product, they said, hey, we're kind of new. We don't have a lot of money. We'll pay you so much on every garment that we sell if you'll wear it. John Daly's royalties last year from Loudmouth exceeded $4 million.
What?
Oh, man. Wow.
Yes.
Loudmouth, send them to my home. I'll wear them for $1 million. I wouldn't even take $4 million. I'll wear them to work every day.
So that was not just a fashion decision. That was a business decision that John made. You mentioned Ricky Fowler. He's a Puma Cobra guy, all same company. Again, a business decision. They just signed him to a lifetime contract. As long as he is alive and playing golf, and I don't know what the numbers are, I'm certain that it's somewhere between $3 and $5 million a year.
Just to wear the hat, the clothes.
Well, play the clubs, the whole bit. So, you know, and then now you got Rory McIlroy and Tiger, and Tiger's not even playing. He's $20 million a year. They're each $20 million a year from Nike.
Wow.
So these are business decisions, but they're also, we're now back to having golf specific attire. You know, for the longest time, we had golf specific attire. We got away from that because tailored clothing, which is, you know, suits and sport coats, everything that we wear, that stuff became, we got rid of it for a while. We had casual work attire. You know, we both know a guy named Lee Heisman that I'm not certain owns a suit. I think he borrows one every time I see him in one.
I swear there's a store called Cargo Shorts. That's really where most of the clothes come from.
So when that happened, golf attire became active wear. And so people just wore golf attire as active wear. A polo shirt, a knit shirt you could buy at any department store, that became a golf shirt. we're now repeating a cycle. And the cycle now is their golf-centric shirts, golf-centric apparel. And that's what these people are putting out. But you know what? Who's it attracting? And this is fabulous. Every tour event that I see on television, every one I go to, you see all these young kids. I mean, I'm talking about 8 to 13 wearing that Ricky Fowler flat bill hat.
I know.
So it's resonating with the kids. Which
they don't even take the tag off. They leave like the little, whatever it is, silver label inside of it. It's like.
So is that the answer you're looking for?
No, I'm not looking for any answer. I just it's interesting in general because, you know, there's a lot of people that will go out and golf's not necessarily a cheap sport and they can spend a lot of money. And I'm just curious where you saw the take on it. And it's very interesting. Yeah.
So I'm curious, is it hot or not to still make deals on the golf course? Because it used to be the thing, right? The standard corporate sort of, hey, you know what, go golfing. And if you're going to make it big in corporate America, you got to take golf lessons. And is that still a hot thing?
Well, first of all, let me dispel another moray. Deals do not get done on the golf course. Deals get started on the golf course. That's really important to keep in mind because, you know, we just came from a meeting this morning with one of our corporate clients, and that topic came up. And it's, yeah, you know, the attorneys and the accountants get the deals done. But the deals get started on the golf course based on the relationship on the golf course. Here's the most important thing to remember, and this is why we'd love for people to take up golf. We're in a decline in the number of players right now, not playing as often. And that's a whole societal change, to be honest with you. But the cost of golf, Ted, is affordable. When you start to go look at some other sports and things you can invest in, it is affordable. It's not all just country clubs, so it's affordable. But here's about when you go out on the golf course with somebody and you play 18 holes and you spend 4 or 5 hours with them, you will learn more in that one round of golf about their character, their disciplines, their integrity, than you would learn having them work with or for you for 10 years. Because you find out on the golf course where they're at, where their mindset is, what their temperament is, how honest or dishonest they might be. And it's a great place.
So, Hank's your foot wedge? I mean, that doesn't, you know, it says a lot, you know, you just, you know, kick the ball away a few things and fling the club into the neighbor's backyard.
Yeah, throw it in the lake.
Is this true when, you know, somebody basically hooks their drive and they break a window, whether or not they actually go to the owner and say, I broke your window, or they go, wasn't me? Is that things like that?
It literally doesn't matter if it was them. And people can go do that because believe it or not, in the mid 80s, the United States Supreme Court, a case went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that once a golf ball leaves the player's club, they have no liability whatsoever.
Is that true?
That's correct.
So it's totally on the honor code.
That's correct.
But you find out if they're honorable or dishonorable. You
know, if in the case that went to the Supreme Court, it was somebody hooked a drive out into a roadway, it hit a car's windshield, the car crashed into something, and the people who crashed the car said, we're going after the golfer.
Ryan, this is why we need the right Supreme Court justices in here, because to decide things like, if I hook my drive, am I really liable or not? Right. Forget about this Roe versus Wade. That means it's nothing. This is the important stuff in here. Yeah.
John Boykin for president.
No, sir.
You're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here on Atlanta Business Radio X. We're here with our CEO, John Boykin, who runs Business Golf International. And one of the things, just while we have a few minutes today in this segment, I know it's not within hot or not, but I know we were talking off air about this new model that you have. You said in the beginning, first segment, that your business is always evolving. Every 3 to 5 years, there are changes. I wonder if you could share with everyone a little bit about this model for client events or even personal events or small gatherings or get-togethers, which I think is a really fantastic idea at a cost-affordable price. I wonder if you could just share with people about, you know, what that looks like.
Sure. We have and again, this is not new. We did it years ago and then kind of stopped doing it because it got to where all of our clients were major clients, big clients, and we were traveling to do things. So this is more to reach out to our friends and associates and acquaintances in the corporate world here in Atlanta. Back to this point of having people learn to play the game and wanting to learn to play the game. We have two instructional programs that we're pulling out of the closet, if you will, that we used to use. And one is called the Scoring Academy, and that's a two-hour short game program, putting, chipping, sand play. You know, the PGA Tour will tell you that 67% of the strokes taken by tour players or on or around the greens.
Oh, I believe that.
So if it's 67% for a tour player, what is it for a 20 handicapper? You know, it's amazing, too, that people will go to the driving range and search for the perfect swing that doesn't exist, and they'll beat balls and they get frustrated. When in fact, if they went and spent the same amount of time putting, chipping, working on their bunker play, those kind of things, their scores would immediately come down. So we have a program we call the Scoring Academy, and that's a 2-hour program for up to 8 people. And it becomes a lot of fun because it's some camaraderie, there's some competitiveness, but you learn literally the fundamentals that tour players have used forever. Another program we have is in, and I'm almost embarrassed at the title of this, but it's an evening with PGA golf professional to corporation and charities, and that's me.
Nice.
And what we do is we do a 2-hour evening program that we partner with our friends at Steel Canyon Golf Club, which is a great learning facility.
Yeah, nice executive course.
It is. And so we take up 6 hitting spots on the range. We have our friends at Tijuana Joe's Mexican Restaurant around the corner comes and caters. We do a fajita bar, margaritas, beer and wine. We can take as many as 18 people for that. So you spend time networking with people. You spend time hitting golf balls and learning under my tutelage. And you'll spend time, having something to eat and a drink or two.
After 1.5 margaritas, your score goes up like it's better. Like not in a bad way, in a good way, right?
Yes. Well, you know what it is you don't play as well, but you don't seem to care.
There we go.
So that's what
happens to Lee Heisman on the golf course.
That's where the impact is. So
you get the cargo shorts.
We have those two programs that are very affordable and sort of an entryway. And again, we were just in discussion with a corporate client that said, yes, I've got, and again, not to get kind of gender bias here, but it is a factor. You know, we have an awful lot of ladies who would like to play the game, but don't know how to get started, how to get an entree into it. This is a great way to do it. In fact, that's how this program was born initially, was helping a corporate person have a bunch of their lady salespeople who want to take up the game of golf in a very unintimidating environment, which this is because we have a lot of fun. So that's the reason this was born. So there's all kind of applications to that and we just go to our website and you can sort of see a lot of this programming, a lot of things that we do.
Well, we're going to take a break from our sponsors. And when we come back, we have our favorite segment of the show, which is called the Plead the Fifth segment right here on the Shrimp Tank. I'm wondering if John Boykin will tell us who the meanest golfer he's ever met in his entire life right here on the Shrimp Tank when we come back in just a minute.
In business, it's either time or money. How much money does your business lose if your network is down for a day? How much time do your employees waste trying to fix computer issues? At Savant, we have the experts that work on your network to simply make your company run more efficiently. Max PCs, mobile solutions, no problem. Savant's battery life never ends. Call 770-438-6240 now.
Hey, we love those Savant guys, and welcome back to the Shrimp Tank right here live every Thursday, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. right here on Atlanta Business Radio X. Thanks for joining us during your lunchtime. We're interviewing today our CEO, John Boykin of Business Golf International. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. Big news again today about being the first in the state of Georgia. You always love being the first at anything, but the first and still and will be the best, right? Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that.
No, that's a given.
Georgia State, come on. You're going to crush them when it comes to entrepreneurship. So if your kids are thinking about that, it's a great to check it out. Also, if you've got kids that want to bring their ideas right here on the Shrimp Tank, shoot us on our website on shrimptankpodcast.com. We'd love to have the kids on and hear more about their ideas and help them shape it out so they can be successful here in the future. In our third segment, we always bring you this idea of Plead the Fifth. Business owners, we love hearing about their business model and the ideas and how they make money and how they've achieved success. But this is a little bit about the why behind, or knowing some of the dark and dirty secrets that you may have always wanted to know out there. So I will start off with my first Plead the Fifth, which is the worst golf course that you've ever played on.
The worst golf course I've ever played
on. I know you play on a lot of great ones, but what's the worst that you've ever played on?
My first 2 years in college were at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. And Bowden.
There's actually a golf course in Macon?
There are several, yes. hard to believe. But
it's right behind the Hooters.
In those days, yes. in those days, which was in the dark days, you know, persimmon heads and steel shafts, not wooden shafts. And everybody thinks I was around then. But we used to play our golf team matches at a place called Bowden Golf Club.
Bowden Golf Club.
And I can promise you, it is, if there's a blade of grass on that golf course, it's an orphan. So, yes, that's probably the worst that I've ever played. But I will jump a step ahead and tell you something I just learned recently. I'm from Savannah, Georgia. I'm a native Georgia.
Beautiful place.
And Bacon Park Golf Course that I grew up on, which was always pretty rough as well, but is a Donald Ross design golf course.
Really?
Yeah, one of the ones that very few people know about. And Donald Ross, if you don't know, he is the patriarch, literally, of golf course design in this country. Designed so many great golf courses, Pinehurst number 2, et cetera. But Bacon Park Golf Course in Savannah has just undergone a multi-million-dollar renovation. I just learned this recently from one of my friends in Savannah. They have restored it to Donald Ross's original design.
Wow.
And it is in very, very mint condition right now. So if you're somebody and hearing this program and you are a golfer and you would like to go play a truly great golf course that nobody knows about, Savannah, Georgia, just down the road, Bacon Park Golf Course.
I like it.
So that's from worse to good news.
I like that.
So next question.
All right. Next question. Have you ever thrown a round of golf to get a deal done?
Whoa.
Absolutely not. And I will tell you why not.
Never take it a dive, huh?
No. I can tell you this. First of all, if I take a client out who's a mediocre golfer, and I have the three little initials PGA behind my name, and as we jokingly say, I have my name on my bag, if he beats me, then he's lost all respect and I have no credibility. So do you answer your question as an emphatic no? In fact, I grind when I play corporate golf, I grind on every shot because I'm just plain not that good anymore. So I'm one of these people that the older I get, the better I used to be.
Who's the biggest drunk that you ever met in the PGA professionals that literally would drink on the course or maybe after the course have a pop or two or 10 in the clubhouse?
Well, I'll give you a quick comparison. Yeah, because I give you a quick comparison. Unfortunately, if somebody who kind of pays attention to ESPN, John Saunders.
Oh, yeah, great.
Passed away yesterday, a tremendous man. And the big discussion yesterday on the air was how beloved he was. And somebody brought up the fact that Stuart Scott, who was another ESPN personality who passed away last year, was beloved. And the response from on air was, no, Stuart was respected but never beloved. He was controversial. He was polarizing, et cetera. Well, I'll go down that route with your question. We had a fellow by the name of Dan Sykes who played on the PGA Tour long before me, even in the mid-60s to early 70s, who passed away from having drunk himself to death.
Oh, my God.
And he was pretty fluid on the golf course during rounds as well. And everybody large flask, but everybody knew that. So, but to be honest with you now, I'd be sort of cheating this process if I didn't fess up. I can tell you the limited amount that I played, I'd have to have a couple before the round. Everybody thinks that tour players, these guys out there that it's funny because
right.
the radio
they're
and
ice
television,
men, right?
but they're just, Carlos Colon, let me tell you something. It was funny because I got up this morning to watch the first shots hit in the Olympics. And this first time in over 100 years, we have golf in the Olympics. I can tell you that Bubba Watson, who everybody thinks is this bravado guy, won 2 Masters. They said that he was so nervous he could barely tee up the ball on his first tee shot today.
Crazy.
So it is, this is the one thing about golf that makes it so unique. It is all about an individual sport. You can talk team all you want to. You can talk relationships, partners, et cetera. It's an individual game. And the enormous amount of pressure that's on these guys at that level is just mind-boggling. One of the great things that my association, the PGA of America, is doing now is we have a program called PGA Junior League. If you've got a young person, and I'm talking about from age 7 to 11, that wants to start playing golf, go look that up online, PGAJuniorLeague.com. It's part of the PGA of America. It's this these events that we do where we put kids on teams and we put them all in the same color shirt with numbers on the back, and so that they, some of that individual pressure is diminished. It's a great, great program to grow the game, and we're very proud of that.
Chris, let's do one more.
One more. All right. The most embarrassing thing you've ever done or seen on a golf course?
Done or seen. Okay, I'll go with the scene.
Yeah, see, I gave you an out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was like, I was going to leave it
thank
done.
You. Very kind. I watched a gentleman in a tournament some years back at Goshen Plantation in Augusta, Georgia. And I'm talking about, this is in the early 80s. We're playing a Georgia PGA section event, and the 18th hole there is a par four that hills up. There's a tee up high on the hill, and you hit down to a fairway, and there's a lake to the left of the fairway, and then you hit up to the green. Well, this guy had played pretty badly all day, and he hit his tee shot into the lake. And when he drove down there in his cart, he stopped at the lake. He took his partner's, the other guy riding with him, the cart, took his bag off, put it on the ground, and he drove the cart right into the lake.
Nice.
Comes swimming out of the lake. Here's the embarrassing part for him. He comes swimming out of the lake, walks up to the clubhouse, and 10 minutes later realizes that his wallet, his watch, his car keys, everything are in his golf bag.
There you go.
So now he's got to go back. And I'm all we could do was just sit there and laugh. So
scuba diving time. Well, we wanted to thank you for coming on the Shrimp Tank today. We will be doing... Our follow-up after this. It's going to be great to see the replay. We'll have great video on YouTube that you can all see. And as always, you can catch a replay of this broadcast on shrimptankpodcast.com. For those, John, that are listening today that want to learn about how to potentially hire your company for a corporate event, or they're looking at doing one of these cool new events that you have, how can somebody listening to the program today get in touch with you?
Well, our phone number is pretty simple. It's 770-551-0300. 770-551-0300. Easiest way is to go to businessgolfinternational.com. It's pretty simple. And again, sorry it's so long, but BGI Golf was taken by somebody else and we couldn't wrestle it away from them. But businessgolfinternational.com, it has all of our contact information on there. It has some of our success stories, has a lot of our programming, and we love dealing with it. I want to inject this, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to sit here today and talk with all of you. It's been a fabulous experience. Golf is a great way to build business relationships, to get new clients, to bolster the relationship you have with clients. But we also have a unique track record of showing you how to put a charitable component with that tactic, with using golf as a business tool. We'll show you how to put a charitable component into it so that all the shareholders and stakeholders and all the participants are happy about being on the golf course doing this in your event, because you're also doing some good. Two quick numbers that I think will astonish you. Charitable golf in the 50 United States results in $4.2 billion, that's with a B, $4.2 billion net dollars to support charitable causes in this country every year.
That's crazy. That's a huge amount of money.
And the number that it, because it's interesting, the PGA Tour on all their events, they tout how philanthropic they are and how charitably driven and how much money their tournaments raise. Their tournaments raise $100 million for charities each year. That's $100 million of that $4.2 billion. So you can see that the rest of it is done by small to medium-sized corporate and charitable events, and you do make a difference in people's lives. Keep that in mind.
Well, I'll tell you, for those folks listening, I've had the good pleasure of working with John on some private charity events. I've seen him do it for really large nonprofit corporations. It's also really large for-profit corporations, and it's amazing stuff. So you ought to take a look at his company, Business Golf International. Next week, when we come here on the Shrimp Tank, what do you do when the mayor calls you and says, I want to be on your show? Well, it's amazing stuff with the mayor of Kennesaw, Derek Easterling. wants to be on the Shrimp Tank. So we'll find out. Maybe we'll ask him some plead the fifth questions about Kennesaw when you come here and join us next week on the Shrimp Tank.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When I take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When I take a swim, only option is to win.